Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Stop That or You'll Go Blind podcast. I'm your host, Tony Stevens from Baltimore, Maryland, and joining me is our co-host, Evan Kravitz from Denver, Colorado. We're just two dads trying to figure this world out without ruining it for our kids. Enjoy. Hey, man.
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I am fantabulosus.
Fantabulosus.
Yes, it's a new condition that is the onset of extreme cabin fever.
Gotcha.
Brought on by living in a house that's only 13 feet wide. So, yeah.
Gotcha. So you and the kids and Lauren, you guys killing each other, or you think you'll make it
back
through this?
No. It just puts a whole new spin to the Cain and Abel story. So that must have been the first plague when Cain was stuck with Abel for too much time.
Yeah.
So that was probably, you know, of the 10. Hey, by the way, happy late Passover.
Thank you very much. Happy Easter.
Yeah. So, you know, we celebrated it by trying to watch Mass on a 1-inch by 3-inch screen of Facebook Live. That was rather poor.
Well, we did the same. So I will just admit to you that I'm not the model Jew, as I did not even realize it was Passover until I got a text message from my sister yesterday saying, hey, are you going to be part of the big Seder we're going to do on Zoom? And I was like, what are you talking about? And she had a couple of things to say to me about that. And I was like, oh, it's Passover. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was going to join you the whole time.
Right.
So yeah. I'm just not so, you know, I'm in an interfaith marriage. Lane is Catholic.
Yeah.
And I'm Jewish. And I swear I know more about every Christian holiday and everything Christianity related. But when it comes to Judaism, I'm like, wait, it's Passover, huh?
Yeah.
So we did a Zoom Seder with family in Georgia, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, San Francisco, New York, and here in Colorado. And it was amazing. It was really, really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You should check out, if you didn't see Jason Alexander, did you see him hosting? They did like a Seder online.
I did. I watched it only because I wanted to see Idina Menzel, who I'm just a big fan of. But yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I saw a couple minutes of it. You know who Idina Menzel is, right?
Yeah. Okay. We loved the Sarah Silverman, where she was the one keeping the matzo bowl at the end.
Yeah.
And then Bette Midler's Elijah, I thought was rather
nice. Oh, yeah, I know. I saw Bette Midler in it too. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, so it was fun. We watched it with the kids, so it was sort of an educational thing. So.
Yeah.
Because we have some Jewish family up in New York as well, so it's I'd say diehard Catholic, but we were like, we only watched like 5 minutes of the homily during the Mass, and I was right. Like, it was kind of disappointing. The guy was like, he had like the perfect opportunity. Like I spent 7 years doing the monk gig, like studying to be a priest and in seminary and monastery life and stuff. And I'm like sitting there salivating, like thinking this is like the perfect, even like the Seder conversations, like Henry Winkler talking about on the Seder Zoom. If folks haven't checked it out online, it's a good thing that they were able to put together. I was impressed with it. But, you know, there was like this sense of redemption and it's like, I really got like the, you know, next year in Jerusalem and like waiting for Elijah. And it you know, to not be Jewish myself, it really resonated at this, you know, being shut in now on what essentially feels like the 11th plague, everyone was saying.
Yep.
So, so I'm like thinking, oh, well, you know, the Catholic Church can knock this one out. Like, this is just waiting, like, resurrection, we're born again, and we're in a tomb now, but just you wait, world. And he, like, dropped the ball horribly. It was so sad.
Oh, wow.
He just like read like what seemed like notes from seminary for what you would do for an Easter homily. And I was like, really, man? Like, I would be like all over this. I was salivating going, oh, if I didn't get married. But alas, thus is the world. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish.
On a completely side note, nothing necessarily to do with the Seder, but I read not long ago, speaking of just Jewish tradition and navigating the new world in this 11th plague. Is that sacrilegious to say that? I don't know.
No.
No, the problems they're having in Europe right now with finding moyles is apparently a serious thing, because they, like Norway, can't get moyles into the country for doing Brit Malas and stuff. So, because all the borders are closed up. So there's this like quandary of what do we do now? So anyways, you know, that's the least worried Europe has right now.
That's
still significant.
I tell you, what is a moyle? No, I think I know what a moyle is. Is it the person who, this is going to be gross, the person who does the circumcision?
We can just leave.
There we go. Okay. I'm Jewish, huh? What?
I just remember from that, you know, seminary, we studied both, what is it? The Blues Brothers. We have both types of music here, country and Western. I'm like, we studied both the Old and the New Testament in seminary.
Well, I did make a joke over Zoom that bombed fantastically. I don't know. Did you ever see the movie The Jazz Singer with Neil Diamond?
Yes.
So there's a scene at the end, or towards the end, where he sings Kol Nidre for Yom Kippur, which is the holiest of the holidays for Jews. Yeah. And so we were all doing a Seder. We were all on Zoom, and we all had printed out Seder books. So we each had a part to read. And, you know, it got to my part, and I said, hey, I'm confused. Shouldn't I be hearing Neil Diamond singing Kol Nidre? And nothing, just like, you know, crickets. And finally, my sister chimed in. She's like, Evan, no, he sang on Yom Kippur. I think you're getting the holidays mixed up. And I was just like, yeah, it was a joke, you know, but it was this, and then it just bombed. And, you know, Lane looked at me, my daughter looked at me, like they lost faith in humanity. Like,
not even
like,
Ted got it?
No, not even Ted. No one.
Oh, man.
So, you know, and that was my big Neil Diamond joke. I spent most of the morning writing that. And by the way, that's a good movie. So just to digress for a second. So Neil Diamond, one of the greatest Jews in the history of mankind.
Who did a great Christmas record, by the way.
Whatever.
Continue.
Don't even get me started on that.
I mean, it's not Barbara Streisand's Christmas record, but
Don't get me started on that either. But when Neil Diamond started in this movie, The Jazz Singer, this was back in the 80s, the movie bombed, and he got panned by everyone. I mean, he just took a beating on it. And it's really a good movie. The music is, I mean, if you're a Neil Diamond fan, even if you're not a Neil Diamond fan, it's like, it's just a fun, good movie with a lot of good music.
I remember watching it.
And maybe three people have seen.
We had Showtime when I was a kid, and that came on like all the time on Showtime.
Lawrence Olivier's in it. I don't think
I've watched it. Is he really?
Yeah.
I am going to rewatch that.
Lawrence Olivier plays his father, who's ultra orthodox, and Neil Diamond, he's supposed to marry this nice Jewish woman, but he's not really in love with her. And then he falls in love with a Christian woman, and Lawrence Olivier is distraught, and he runs away, and his son is dead to him. And, you know, and Neil Diamond, you know, he had just had a power through it.
Yeah.
It was a blockbuster performance.
I'll put that on the list to watch again. Cause it has probably been,
you're not going to watch it.
I will watch it.
I will not watch it.
It is. I mean, in lieu of us not having the Olympics this summer, I will watch it, because that song is like always played in the Olympics. I remember,
you know what? Every week I'm going to ask you, did you watch The Jazz Singer yet?
I go right ahead.
Like one of those movies where, you know, if you go into gas stations, they have these little kiosks with DVDs. It's that movie that you'll find for like $5.99.
Well, we did have to buy a DVD player the other week, because I feel like we've exhausted our Netflix. So and I found a box of old Blu-rays and DVDs. So it's like, all right, we're gonna get a new DVD player.
That's
so I'll go hang out at a truck stop, get a good shower there.
Yep.
Some veggie meatloaf, if they make veggie meatloaf.
Probably. Exactly. That's what you want. You want to go to the nearest gas station, get some of their takeout meatloaf, copy nice of The Jazz stop. Singer. Yeah, yep. Exactly. Yep.
And maybe a, maybe a couple of other illnesses that aren't corona based.
but this is the Easter. This is the big one for Christians and Catholic. Well, I guess Catholic, and my wife gets upset when I say she's Catholic. She's like, no, I'm Christian. And I'm like, no, you're Catholic. And I don't know what the difference is between you know, is every Catholic a Christian or is every Christian a Catholic? I don't know.
Well, the word Catholic means universal, like with a lowercase c. So the idea is that, like, you know, all, I mean, I'm not going to take wear my Catholic hat now with a big C, but, like, you know, everyone sort of under the umbrella is part of a universal church.
Right.
And it's just everyone is sort of like, you know, gotten upset and like said, no, you're not doing it right. We're going to go over here and do it. And mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, well, you guys are still, we're still friends, right, guys? Like the Catholic Church is kind of like, okay, you go right ahead. Go ahead and take my, you know, take my sandbox toys and we're still friends, right, guys? Right? You still like me, right? Like that's kind of the Catholic Church. So, you know, so it, but it's like not all Christians are Catholic.
Okay.
But all Catholics are Christian.
All Catholics are Christians.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, but it's like, I mean, I say we're still Catholic, but, you know, I love the new Pope. I mean, because he's a Jesuit and I was in the Jesuits and it's mm-hmm. a great sort of group of outstanding men. But, you know, it's a kind of thing where it's, so I was a little bit upset the last election, maybe, that it was just, you know, kind of, I was like, guys, this is like serious stuff. Like, I know we're not really supposed to talk about politics, but, you know, we're supposed to be like neutral. Mm-hmm. But come on, guys, like, this is serious things going on here. And so it's watching the mass, unfortunately, on Easter Day, it just reminded me of there's a big communication thing going on that could probably be improved just between, mm-hmm. you know, having to wear the collar and be one of those clergy. On the Dark. Inside of the monasteries and rectories and church halls and things like that. And I do an amazing work. It was the amazing 7 years of my life, you know, getting right. to Israel and Latin America and working, you know, homeless shelters and with the poor and students, university stuff. But at the same time, it's like, guys, just figure this out. Like, yes, you know, the children thing was bad enough.
Yeah.
But now it's just like, it's having trouble adapting to the 21st century. So as you know, it was like, how can I be part of this religion? And when I watched the Seder thing, going back to that, I felt somehow tied to it, even though I'm not Jewish. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's like, you know, I'm sitting there watching with my kids and I felt it was so much more moving than my own faith had to offer this morning when it could have been literally a home run. Sure. Of like a, you know, a sermon, so to speak. But anyways, but what is it they say? Don't talk politics and religion at the dinner table. So, but yeah, so my Catholicism has been compressed into a 1x3-inch video stream feed.
Yeah.
Where the priest was still, so it was a 1x3 and the priest was like, it was a huge old church in our neighborhood. Cause we're in this old neighborhood in Baltimore.
Right.
And so it was that plus 80 feet. And then he holds up a picture and says, here's a picture I took of some stained glass windows. And he's like at the altar, like 80 feet away on a 1x3 screen.
Right.
Holding up a picture that Lauren was like, it's covered in glass. It's reflecting. You can't see even, you know, it's like a size of like a popcorn kernel.
Right, right.
It picture you're trying to hold up. So I don't know. I was like, medium's the message, man. Medium's the message. Marshall McLuhan.
Well, I saw a video of the Pope. Doing Matt. Well, I didn't see the video today, but a couple of days ago where he delivered a sermon and I mean, into a totally empty, St. Basilica's square. Is that right? What it is? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that was like really dramatic video because usually when the Pope, you know, does his sermon outside of you know, these thousands upon thousands of people.
Yeah. I missed that. I was too at the point of yelling at my children, so I didn't get to see that.
Yeah. Did you ever get to go to visit the Vatican?
I never did.
Okay. I thought you did.
No, I got to Europe, but I never got, okay. I've been to Notre Dame in Paris and I've been to like,
yeah,
Frankfurt of Prague and Czech and some other places, but I did go to the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. That was pretty powerful.
Okay.
That's like the church that like, they have to give the keys to a Muslim.
Right.
Because they don't, you know, the Christians fight too much over it as like, who's it supposed to be?
Right. So right.
This Muslim in this badass robe, like that's like something out of Indiana Jones, but like minus 800 years in the past.
Right.
Like he should be wielding a battle axe or something, like just a badass big Muslim. And he like closes the door and throws down this like huge latch. So if you're inside the church at night, people will go and spend the night there. You're literally locked in. Like there's no getting out. So if like shit goes down inside, it's like, good luck. I hope your faith is really strong right now. Cause yeah, they entrust the Muslim person to, sort of hold the keys to the Holy Sepulchre because the Christians are afraid they'll fight over it.
Okay. Gotcha.
Anyways. But yeah, man.
Well, you know, I was, speaking of traveling, I remember I started thinking the other day, and this popped in my head, but I think you used to have this thing where you would go from state to state, or even when you were out of the country, and one of the things that you would do is you would specifically look for local radio stations, you know, in every new, maybe in every new town, or definitely in every big city that you went to, because you probably saw this huge connoisseur of radio, of traditional radio.
I had my little Sony TCD pack, which is like PR reporters would use.
Yep.
And I plugged in a little like Grunig shortwave FM AM radio. And yeah, I would do that. I went the big trip once was from Portland to Portland, 21 days on a Greyhound and an Amtrak.
That's right. I remember that.
And it was, by the time I got to LA, I wanted to just run into the water and drown by a shark.
Well, I was
on a Greyhound. Was hell.
Yeah. You couldn't pay me enough. You did it for science. That was,
I did. Well, I mean, I was working on a freelance piece at the time, kind of a Charles Gras, this is what America sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through like morning DJs I should pull some of those tapes out. I found a bunch of the tapes. I just got to get a cassette player to work. Transfer them over. It was right before 9/11 though. And then everything changed.
Well, because one of the things you and I did in college at the University of Georgia was we worked at the college radio station.
Yeah,
man. And that was, I mean, to this day, you know, of all the experiences I had in college, that remains the tops for me because it was really traditional radio. It was just, you know, a mixing board in front of you and you had this transmitter next to you that was like pieced together with electrical tape and stuff. And, you couldn't touch it because the plate was real hot and, but it was this really just kind of traditional old fashioned radio. And so I was thinking in the car the other day, about you working there, me working there, and then, you going throughout the country listening to radio stations and everything. And I realized I felt guilty because I'm a huge satellite radio guy. Like I can't tell you the last time I listened to FM or AM radio. Like I literally could not tell you.
Yeah.
I am all about satellite radio and digital radio and all that stuff now. And so my point in saying this is that when I was listening to Sirius XM the other day, you don't really get the personalities that you used to get or you do get on FM and AM radio. You know, it's more, and this is what I like about satellite radio, is that it's more music, no commercials, you're already paying for this stuff. So, and so I don't know. I was wondering like how popular radio still is with everything that's going on with streaming and all that stuff.
I think as long as there's going to be people driving to work, I think you're going to have FM radio. You know, because it's your traffic, which satellite. I mean, satellite's got those traffic channels,
right?
But and it's just I don't know. It's like what's that Rush song? You know, sort of the familiar voices. Travel through airwaves.
Spirit of radio.
Yeah, spirit of radio. Yeah. I will find myself, we have an Alexa in the house. Hopefully she won't turn on right now.
Well, I did look up I got curious about, how FM radio is doing in the time of Sirius XM and all that stuff. And the CNBC headline, this is from an article last year in August 2019. Says FM radio still reaches more Americans than smartphones and television.
Interesting. Yep. Wow.
In a recent Music Watch survey, only 34 of the respondents reported loving AM or FM radio. On the other hand, Spotify, Apple Music, and Pandora came in at 78%, 65%, and 51%, respectively. So I'm just wondering, you know, how much longer, you know, traditional FM AM radio is really going to be around?
I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, because it's still, you know, you hear a lot of the iHeart Radio Network, and now they're totally into podcasts. Now it's iHeart Radio Pod. Now it's like iHeart Podcast. Like, I want to say like Stuff You Should Know and all that stuff that's out of Atlanta that Discovery Channel started up. The whole How Stuff Works network, you know, is like a part of iHeartRadio now. Like, and so it is like podcasts are kind of the new radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I still find myself, I listen to podcasts, but I will also still listen to Q104.3 out of New York, WXRT out of Chicago, 93XRT, which if you're into just eclectic music, KCRW in Los Angeles, like there are still stations that I listened to when I did that trip.
Right.
It made me feel like I was part of the community, you know?
Is that through that app TuneIn or it's something?
TuneIn on Alexa. We do it on Alexa, but you can get on your phone and stuff. And so, yeah, I still listen to that stuff. In fact, sometimes I'll even put on like, oh, geez, there she goes. Now she's listening.
Oh, Alexa.
yeah, man. So, but yeah, radio. It's, I would not tell my child to go major in radio like I did and you did, you know?
Right.
Like, remember the little radio booths we used to go in and we would cut tape and
run cart machines.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Cart machines and
with the radiation and everything. Yeah. What you want to do is you want to move this cart around this huge, you know, rotating or vibrating magnet and just leave your hand on that for about a minute or so.
Now you just get your, you know, get your testicles really close to it. And and that, then it's great.
Yeah.
And that it used to vibrate the cart. Like, I mean, you put it on there and it'd be like,
well, yeah, I remember it made our urine turn green.
Oh, God. I was blind.
But you would, you would put that cart on this little metal disc. And like, even at the time when I was doing it and I knew nothing about radio, I'm like, there's no way this is good for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
No possible way.
Nowadays, we just accidentally hit delete and then lose a whole playlist.
But that was fun. That was fun.
Those were good days. College radio. It's got to be. I mean, we were talking about trying to set up like a podcast class at the school. You know, it is just there's something about that spirit of just sticking it to the man, like, you know, the renegade. Because we were like, you know, people were like, oh, well, what fraternity were you? And I was like, oh, I was a Gamma Delta Iota. God darn independent, you know? And so, yeah, it was. There was a spirit. You're right. It was just a great time that I feel like I wonder if I like would go back to grad school if I could like slowly move my way back into college radio. But I would.
You could. No, college radio is still big. I mean, I can only speak for Denver now, and I know I think like the Grand Poobah, you know, Album 88 in Atlanta is still around too.
Are they? Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you would find. I did go back to our college radio station, WOG, 5 or 6 years ago. I visited Athens, and it really had changed a lot. I mean, first of all, a lot of it was automated. So instead of having that tradition, you know, I think they used to call them pots, you know, the mixer the big board knobs, with the big knobs and everything, and you flip the switch and the on-air light would go on. It wasn't there anymore. It was basically it was a soundboard, but then it was hooked up to a couple of different computer screens. Which is, you know, if they have the money for it, so yeah, they might as well do it. But you know, college radio, though, I mean, you know, because when you and I were there, and this was WOG in Athens,
the 90s, mid 90s, so it was like the heyday of like kind of the resurgence of Django indie pop.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think the philosophy of the station was, if you've been signed, if you've got a record deal, we're not interested in you.
Yeah.
But if you're, you know, some band and you're playing in your garage and you're just hoping that people can hear you, we're going to have your music and play your music and everything. And I just, there was this one story. I remember I was driving in the campus and you were around too. And, I'm listening to our radio station in the car driving to campus. And then it goes from the next, after the song ended, it just went to static. just static.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, no problem. I mean, this happens from time to time. They'll, whoever's in the booth will figure it out. And yeah, 5 minutes goes by, 6 minutes, 10 minutes goes by, and you're just hearing static. So I pulled into the student center. I ran up to the radio station, you know, expecting to, I wanted to help, you know, how can I get our station back on the air? And I ran in there into the booth, and I was like, hey guys, you know, what's going on with the static? What can I do to help? And they're like, oh no, this is that new song by that band that we're playing. Jeez. I'm like, no, it's static. And I, Tony, I shit you not.
This, no, I true. Believe you.
I was like, dude, it's static. He's like, no, that's art.
There was one guy that always played these fractals that was like mathematical noise. And it was just like,
yeah,
like listening to like when a modem would, and it was just like, but you know what? I got a big respect for that now. I mean, because out of that, all that stuff, you would get the, well, like when we were there, think about it, like bands like Of Montreal, Neutral Milk, Olivia Tremor Control, Harvey,
Yo La Tango,
Nirvana was too big right when we got there, but they broke. I remember, if you check out the first Pearl Jam album, I think on the insert is a picture of Eddie Vedder with an Uptown Lounge t-shirt, which was a big club in Athens at the time. And it was like, you know, that was like, we were playing them in Nirvana. Well, I mean, it all started with the B-52s and then R.E.M., Pylon.
Yeah.
They were like the legend bands before we were there. But we were sort of like part of that second wave in the 90s, which was just some great music coming out of Athens.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it was 90.5 that first played R.E.M.
Yeah.
And then once R.E.M. got huge and all that, you know, it was like, well, we're not playing that anymore. But I remember a couple of years ago, they were moving the radio station from one building where it had been for years and years and years to the new student center. And they had Mike Mills come in and DJ the last 2 or 3 hours that the station was going to be in this one particular part of the building. And there's a couple of pictures of Mike Mills in the booth, cool, like playing records and stuff. Yeah.
He came up a couple times in the 90s, I remember, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He was friends with one of the DJs, because he was bartending at Engine Room all the time. Like, we would go into the Engine Room on Washington Street, right, which was right next to the 40 Watt, which was a big club where Peter Buck's wife ran. Mm-hmm. And we would always do live remotes there. But, yeah, he would always be at the Engine Room wearing this big white cowboy hat, making White Russians. We would buy them by the pint for $5. And, oh, my God, I miss grad school.
I miss that place. I miss that place tremendously. I remember you scored one of the biggest interviews in the history of 90.5. You got Fred Schneider from the B-52s.
Yeah.
And you did interview with him. And I was like, that Tony Stevens, he's a living God. Oh. And I think you said something like, so after you did the whole interview, you know, we cut up bits and pieces of it and played bites, and I think at one point you said, so that's a Fred Schneider from the B-52s. I would play some of their music, but we cannot do that at 90.5 FM. Yeah.
They're too popular. Now we're going to play Love Shack, everybody.
Instead of playing the B-52s, here's Static.
Yeah.
Man, that was fun, though. Those were fun times. Those were just fun times. And, you know, that was the beauty of radio. I mean, because, you know, you and I have talked that, you know, the community college I work at, they really love the idea of doing a college radio station, but it's just going to be podcasts off of a computer server.
Yeah, there's something about live. About live that just has that energy of just like I remember, because when I was advisor for the radio station, you know, we'd be riding around probably in your car, and I would hear a DJ say like, oh shit, I missed this, you know, like say something bad.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we can say that on podcast now, but you can't say that on FM radio. We get, you know, $5,000 fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to get on the phone and like yell at them.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that I specifically, my last year at the radio station, you were still there, but I specifically took the 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Shift because I thought, all right, everyone will be asleep. I could go in, I could play whatever music I want because no one's listening and I'm just going to do it for me. And sure enough, like every time I would put on, I remember I put on a Pink Floyd song from their first album, Piper at the Gates of Dawn. And I played it and I'm like, yeah, I'm screwing everybody. I'm playing Pink Floyd. And sure enough,
commercial. You know,
Amber Townsend, the program director, called me up. She's like, "Why are you playing Pink Floyd?"
Yeah.
And that was funny. That was, oh wow, I missed that stuff.
Yeah.
I really, really missed that. But yeah,
I'll have to find some of the audio because we had our show for a while, Athens AM, you and I. I'll have to see if I can find some of that audio, maybe in a few podcasts, and punch it out there.
So yeah, so you know, going back to this article, the U.S. Still spends an average of 102 minutes a day tuned into the radio, and the majority of that takes place when you're in the car.
You know, it's going to be interesting. So Arbitron, for folks that don't know, is the service that tracks like Nielsen's TV and Arbitron is radio. It's going to be interesting to read the Arbitron ratings for this quarter, just to see if radio has dropped a lot. To see, that'll tell us probably it's people in their cars, you know, like
right.
Work. It's going to be interesting to see if radio drops significantly. And it's going to be more the blue collar jobs, you know, the bulk of our country.
Right.
Because they can't afford satellite radio or fancier cars with, you know, where they can hook their Apple, you know, and Google, you know, Android audio and stuff like that. So,
well, I actually have a student right now who, she's in my class, and she wants to go into radio. She really wants to work in radio. And I'm like, you know what? I'm a career counselor, so I'm not going to talk her out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to do everything I can to help her.
But empower her.
But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. So, yeah. But,
someone coming to me going, I'm thinking about being a priest. Yeah.
Do you like sex?
Yeah.
First thing you want to ask yourself.
Yes.
Do
you find yourself lonely at night crying into a pillow?
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Oh, man. Well, I have some, I was just thinking of that student now. Like, I need to get back to her. I have some useless facts to share with you.
Ah, useless facts time.
Useless facts. And you'll come up with some good music to lead into the useless facts.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. True or false, people used to answer the phone by saying ahoy instead of hello.
I mean, I know they would say that on ship radios, so.
What the hell is a ship radio?
A ship, sorry.
Oh, ship radio. Okay.
Ship radio. Chips Ahoy, right?
Yeah.
I love Chips Ahoy. You ever put peanut butter on Chips Ahoy? It is like God's gift to just.
Yeah, that's like 5,000 calories
right there. Yeah, I know. It's great. You should see this. Quarantine Tony is not faring that well in the athletic paralysis. Yeah, I will say true.
That is true. Uh-huh. When the public first started using the phone back in the 1800s, Alexander Graham Bell thought that they should answer with ahoy. But Thomas Edison, who was one of his competitors, wanted people to say hello, and in 1880 or something like that, the New York Times reported that people were like, "Yeah, that always sounds stupid. We're gonna say hello." So Alexander Graham Bell lost out.
Bell died penniless and insane, trying to play a phonograph record with a peanut shell. That was Washington Carver. Never mind. Wow, cool. Yeah. What's next?
True or false? A cubic inch of human bone can bear the weight of 5 standard pickup trucks.
No, geez. I'm not a doctor. I will say false.
It is true.
Really?
Bone is extraordinarily strong. Bone is stronger than steel, since a bar of steel of comparable size would weigh 4 or 5 times as much.
So what you're saying is the Terminator was a big pansy.
Yeah, he just needed bone.
Yeah, he just needed bone, not that titanium stuff.
Yeah. True or false, you are 13.8% more likely to die on your birthday.
13.8? I would say you're 1 in 356 chance of dying on your birthday. 13.8. I don't know. True.
That is true. Humans are 13.8% more likely to pass away on their birthday than on any other day. This is according to Swiss mortality statistics studied from 1969 to 2008.
Ah, interesting. For Switzerland.
Yep.
Is that because everyone gets Swiss Army knives for their birthday and they accidentally slice their throats or wrists or something? Like,
that's
like, yeah. So we're going to make a whittled duck. Oh, I lost my wrist.
Man, you just took this podcast to a dark place.
Well, dark, I mean, why else place would they die on their birthday? I mean, other than do people skydive a lot on their birthdays in Switzerland?
I don't know. Alps? You're assuming that I've used some reputable site to find these useless facts.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I just wish you were my professor because I'm seeing a trend here, but go ahead.
Well, the last one, true or false, playing dance music may help ward off mosquitoes.
In as much as it'll ward me off, so I'll go somewhere else if there's mosquitoes around, but I'll say false.
It's true. Very high and very low frequencies, as well as excessive loudness and a constantly escalating pitch, discourages mosquitoes from biting people.
There was a station in Atlanta in the early 90s that said, if you listen to our station, we'll play a frequency. I think it was Z93, which became whatever the Jack FM is or whatever in Atlanta. They would say they would carry a broadcast signal that would ward off mosquitoes at a certain frequency.
They were not lying.
Totally. Were they true? Were they really doing that? I thought it was just bullshit.
No, I never heard that. Yeah. But I mean,
a frequency could scare them off.
Yeah.
See, I always thought it was just BS. So
yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, yeah, I that's why, like, you know, radio stations should be like touting that.
Yeah.
Hey, B98.5, we kill mosquitoes.
Yeah, exactly. We kill mosquitoes. And your chance of a popular night out with friends. What else, you guys? Is that it?
That's it.
Oh, I got something for you.
All right.
All right. So I mentioned earlier, I have now exhausting DVDs. I do have the Freaks and Geeks box set I'm trying to get through, which was an amazing TV show if you haven't watched it. But yeah, I feel like Netflix has come to an end of me just going, meh. tried the Quibi. Meh. Not into it. Not a fan of Quibi. Gone through the DVDs.
Right.
I'm out of options. What do I watch now? What would you recommend in this time of isolation? Top movie. If we were going to be stuck on a desert island, which would be fantastic because that would probably be zero chance of infection.
Right.
What would you bring movie-wise?
You know, so I'm going to be stuck on this island for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
With nothing but a DVD player and a TV.
And I guess a solar panel charger thing for the both of them.
Gotcha. I'm going to go with the movie I've been thinking about lately that I own and that I really want to watch again, Spinal Tap. I would probably bring Spinal Tap. It's not my favorite movie of all time, but it's every time I watch this movie, I'm dying of laughter. I mean, it's just a great, great, great movie. And plus, it has guitar amps that go up to 11. So that's the best part about it.
Yeah, you got that going for you, which is nice.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. Would it be the DVD extended version with all the outtakes?
I did not know that there's an extended version.
Again, next time you're at a truck stop, you know, after you're through, you know, walking through the little cologne spritzer in the bathroom that sprays down cologne, you need to see if they have Spinal Tap on DVD because it's got these outtakes that are make it even, it's like an extra hour of funny. So
I'm actually going to be on the lookout for that then.
Yeah, you got to check it out. There's like these whole scenes that were taken out of the movie that are.
But I mean, one of the things that I love about that movie is that, you know, those guys all learned how to play those instruments. Like that's them playing.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton and all of them. I mean, it was, what was the album that they're trying to promote? It's like Taste the Fist, Feel Something the Fist. Smell the Glove.
Oh, Smell the Glove. Yes. Yes.
And like Fran Drescher's character is trying to tell them why the record company won't do this. So yeah, that is my guilty pleasure movie, Spinal Tap.
Yeah, it's when goes to 11.
and yours?
Oh, mine. Oh.
I know what it's going to be.
What do you think it's going to be?
I think it's going to be The Godfather.
Actually, no.
Because in your room at UGA, you did have
a Godfather picture on your wall. I had the box set.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the Godfather is good. Don't get me wrong. You know, I would if I was probably like taking 10 DVDs, I would probably take 10. Typically, I would say my favorite movie of all time is Jaws. But if I was on a desert island, I don't know if that would be the right movie to watch. I'd be
a little
nervous to go swimming. So so it wouldn't be Jaws, even though that is like my favorite. That's the movie that I watch at least 3 times a year.
Right.
Man, what movie would it be? So it would probably be, and this is a new movie, but man, I've watched it 3 times this year, and it just still blows my mind, is a Jojo Rabbit. It came out in like the fall.
Yeah, with Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson, and it's a Taiki Waititi. I never can say his name right. I feel so bad. But yeah, the guy that did Thor Ragnarok, and he did another funny. Really, his first film was what is it? Hunting the Wilder People.
Right.
And it's just a hilarious New Zealand flick of about a delinquent boy on the run with his like foster father. And but yeah, Jojo Rabbit, man, I don't know why, but I could watch that 100 times.
It's
a good movie.
It got great reviews, and I just haven't watched it yet. But man, for as long as I've known you, and I've known you for many years, I never knew that your favorite movie was Jaws. I didn't even see that coming.
I was a quiet Jaws watcher. I would sit down and watch it once a year. And now I just watch it a couple times a year. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's the perfect, like, I think the more I got into writing after I left, you know, I did a lot of writing after journalism, like, you know, it's just like the perfect story, right? You don't see the bad guy until like well into the movie. It's always just alluded that it's there, but you never actually see it till so far into the film. It's got such great characters, and it was shot on like a budget, right? Like you know, one of the most identifiable music scores probably in cinematic history is one instrument just going bottom, you know. And it's like, and they only had like a 20-piece orchestra. John Williams did for that whole film, and it's like,
I didn't know that,
you know, the idea that you can do an awful lot with very little. I think the more I've grown up, the more I've gained respect for that philosophy. But again, not the best movie for a desert island.
No. I mean, I'm thinking if you're gonna be on a desert island, you want maybe, you know, a full copy of Lost.
Yeah,
Castaway.
Castaway.
Castaway would be a good one.
You know, what's the one? Maybe something, you know, a pick me up piece, like what was the one where the guy gets his leg stuck and has to like saw his leg off or something like that?
Something hours, 120
yeah, 28 hours or something. Like that.
Yeah.
So,
man, no.
I
can't watch Jaws. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but you know, it just, that movie terrifies me. It's right up there with, see, and I consider Jaws to be a horror movie, and I think most people would disagree with that. It's not a horror movie.
I could see it is scary.
But to me, like, you know, Jaws ranks up there with like The Shining, which I can never watch again. Yeah. And I was just talking about that movie with one of our friends. And I remember trying to watch The Shining. It took me days to get through that movie. Like, I just could not watch it in one sitting. I digress. But yeah, no. I saw bits and pieces of Jaws as a kid, that just scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
You know, and we used to go to the Jersey Shore like every weekend. I'm like, I'm not getting in the water.
So well, that's where it was based on a real story from New Jersey. From like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like all the rivers that like skirt up from Newark to like Hackensack and all that. Like in the 1920s, there was a great white shark attack. Well, they think it maybe could have been bull shark, but yeah, it was like a bunch of swimmers were killed. And so that's what the Peter Benchley, who wrote the book, based it on that. So
I did not know that.
So all good thing, the beaches will all be closed this summer.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway.
Yeah, I enjoy looking at the ocean. I enjoy listening to the ocean, but I'm not a big fan of going in the ocean.
Well, that's the same. I love to be on boats. I love to be on boats, and I love to be on the beach. But I don't
like
to get off the boat. So,
I just remember like the last like the end of Jaws, like what I did watch when the old sailor's recounting, you know, I guess when he was in the war and all the soldiers were, or sailors were in the water, and, you know, one by one, they were, I can't do it. I cannot do it.
How did you not know I love Jaws? Cause my dog's name. I did not know.
You've never talked about it.
Well, what was my dog's name? Come on. Quint.
Remember Quint?
He's the crazy sailor in Jaws.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the crazy, like, captain guy. He's, yeah, you look in those eyes, those dull eyes. They roll in the back of their head. Yeah,
so no, you named your Quint, so. You named your dog after the crazy guy who died a horrific death?
Yes, exactly, yeah.
So. Hey, I love this dog. Your name's Quint.
Oh, Quint was a tough sailor, a salty dog.
Who died? A salty dog. Who died? The guy died at the end. He got ripped apart. Wow, I did not know that, man. My mind is blown.
Well, that aside, you got to check out Jojo Rabbit. It's a whimsical, like, it's up there with like the producers, like Mel Brooks. Mm-hmm. In fact, Mel Brooks gave it like huge praise. It's about, you know, the premise, right?
No, I don't.
So the premise is there's a 10-year-old boy named Jojo Betzler, and he's a Hitler youth. And it's during World War II, and it's based on a book that takes place in Vienna, but it could be anywhere inside, you know, Germany or Austria somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so his mother, who is against the war, is keeping a Jewish girl who's 14 in their house. Mm-hmm. And it's about the relationship, the bigotry this boy exerts at the beginning, and you see this transformation of him, and it is just... It is so telling, and the relationship that builds between he and the girl, and the polarized viewpoints that are amplified in this movie that you just feel like are in the world today.
Right.
And so Taika Waititi is half Jewish himself, and really spoke about, you know, he did some great interviews on it. Just insane, because he plays Adolf Hitler. So the boy, the kitsch of the movie is the boy has an imaginary friend who is Adolf Hitler,
right,
played by the director. And it's just, it reminds me of, like, in the producers, that sense of humor that you just don't get a lot of, that humor that's using comedy to get you through a horrific story.
Yeah.
And, but it has its serious points as well. And it's just, it's a great movie. So, and it's just new. It's just so nice to see something new that, you know, it's like when, you know, Get Lucky came out a couple years ago. I was like, oh, I got to hear that again.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get that with a lot of movies these days.
And I mean, a lot of movies, well, with everything that's going on right now, they're just coming straight to digital or straight to like, right. I think, yeah. No, I have a long line of movies that I need to see. Like, I haven't, you know, one of them is Joker, which I have not seen.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that either.
The other one is Knives Out, which everyone told me is excellent. And a couple others, but I'm just trying to make my way through the movies. The thing with me is that, you know, these days, I don't know, ever since I became a father or a dad, I have a lot of trouble watching anything that's really heavy. Like documentaries and war films. So usually the stuff that I've been gravitating towards lately has been just real dumbass stuff, like Spinal Tap, things like that.
Yeah.
I watch, you know, Ridiculousness on MTV and Jersey Shore because I just want to watch something that's mindless, you know, that has no, and so
I feel you.
That's
on
it.
That.
Yeah.
I'm always like, Lauren's like, what are we going to watch? She'll come down and we'll load up Netflix or Amazon Prime or something. I'm like, can we just do a comedian in cars getting coffee? I just need something short and funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Life
is too scary.
Yeah.
When you have kids.
Yeah, I can't do it. So, and Lane, my wife cannot understand why I'm watching Jersey Shore or Ridiculousness or any of that stuff. And I'm like, because it's mindless. It's there's not, you know, first of all, one show is about people getting hit in the crotch, and the other one's about, you know, a bunch of, you know, buttheads in Jersey. So, that's been me lately.
Well, I will check out Spinal Tap.
I'm
going to watch again. And The Jazz Singer.
And The Jazz Singer.
Great musical. Two of the greatest musical movies ever produced.
For our next podcast, I want to get a full report on how you liked The Jazz Singer. And right, and let me tell you something, Tony. If you do watch it, you gotta have your guitar next to you because you're gonna want to play.
You're gonna want to play.
That's the magic. That's the magic of Neil Diamond.
I don't think I know anything off the jazz singer album. I know like Sweet Caroline, but I don't know the jazz singer. So
the two biggest songs, America.
Yeah.
And Hello Again. No, three.
To America.
Yep. America, Love on the Rocks, and Hello Again.
Mm.
Three of the top. I'm just one of the best concerts I ever saw was a Neil Diamond cover band in Denver. And this place was packed. Neil Diamond.
Nice.
He's eternal.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Cool. Another week.
Another week, man.
We're back on the groove.
We're back.
Far, we've been traveling far.